Hello, and thank you for joining us today on the Gentle Art of Crushing It show, where we focus on learning and sharing with our listeners all there is to know about how to create success in our lives. This show stands on the shoulders of giants. Our mission is to empower and inspire our listeners to create the life of their dreams whilst having a blast in the process. Let's celebrate life together. Welcome to the show.
Welcome back to the Gentle Art of Crushing It. My name's Randy Smith, and I will be your host today. And I'm really excited to have Ryan Gibson with us. Ryan is the president and CIO of Spartan Investment Group. I am an investor with this group, and I am just so excited to have you here with us, Ryan. So welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Randy. Appreciate it.
Awesome. Well, why don't we just jump right in like we always do, and can you tell us a little bit more about yourself and how you found yourself as the president of Spartan Investment Group?
Yeah, actually kind of a fun story. I was an airline pilot for 17 years, and but always been very entrepreneurial. So got into sales in high school and paid for all of my flight training, actually, by selling Cutco knives. So I saw over, I think, 300 people and sold, I don't know, tens of thousands of knives individually, and just absolutely love that.
Love it.
You know, paid for all my flight training, paid for my college, graduated a year early, got into the seat of an airliner at 21 years old, and then flew for about 9 months. And then as the airline industry goes, I got furlough. So I got laid off pretty quickly.
Okay. Were you flying for one of the big airlines at the point? Or
It was Northwest Airlines, so one of the regional feeders. That's kind of where everybody starts, and then they sort of move up into majors. And, I was so excited to get hired by the airlines, and then I became, incredibly bored very quickly. It's a great career. It's a great industry. What I realized is I got to the layover, and I was like, okay, now what do we do? You know, I mean, that's, you know, you're in a parking lot at a hotel, and, I want to get out there and do stuff. So I went on this, this journey of being a, working in regulatory affairs in Capitol Hill in Washington, D.C. And I helped write regulation and work with private and major airlines and actually states countries around the world, write their aviation regulations and do a lot of that stuff. But I still found myself trading my time for my money, where I'd either have to go fly or do a lot of consulting to earn income. And really caught the bug when I started doing pilot crash pads, where I would build make an apartment building or an apartment unit around an airport, have the bunk beds and furnishings for pilots that needed housing before they started their trip. And so I sort of started a couple of these crash pads and ended up selling them to somebody, made a little bit of money. And I said, that was pretty cool. That was kind of like my first real estate play without owning real estate. And so I flew for the airlines and that was going great, but there was just something missing in my life. And my wife always encouraged me, like, you're entrepreneurial, you got to figure out what your thing is. And, one thing that I've always done is sales. You know, I've always been very promotion, marketing, sales, et cetera. And one day, the house for sale came up for sale, or the house two doors down from me in Washington, D.C. came up for sale. And so every time somebody walked by it, I'd walk outside and pretend to check my mail and strike up a conversation with a potential buyer. And one of those buyers ended up being my now business partner. So
what are the odds, right?
Yeah. So if you want to learn, if you want to find a business partner, just check with your neighbors first. I don't know. It was pretty serendipitous. And we ended up flipping four houses on the block. We ended up doing a lot of residential development in our nation's capital. And that's kind of how we got our start. And then we just said, hey, we really want to build a company. We want to build a brand. We want to scale to nationwide. We want to have a $5 billion portfolio. And so we said, hey, what asset class do we want to underpin this company? And we said, self-storage was the one. So now we're the 36th largest owner and operator of self-storage in the world. And we're in 13 states, 40,000 units, 55 properties, growing to 100 properties this year. Wow. And we've raised about $300 million for storage and just really scaled the company in 8 years that we've been here. And we now have 150 person team and a lot of stuff went into that, but really it came down to having our ability to raise money and then also having our ability to build a great brand and a good culture at Spartan and have that strategic vision to get there. So it's been a lot of fun, and that's kind of where we are today as a co-founder and president of Spartan.
Are you interested in real estate investing but don't know where to get started or think you don't have the time or money? Are you stuck in your W-2 because the golden handcuffs make it hard to walk away? If this sounds like you, check out impactequity.net and schedule some time to talk with the founder, Randy Smith. Randy went from massive income to leaving his W-2 through passive income, and he can help you do the same. www.impactequity.net.
Love it, love it, love it. So quite the story, and some zigzags in your entrepreneurial path, as we hear quite often with folks. I love the kind of the core competency of sales being built probably during your time with Cutco, which kicks off some of the best salespeople probably in the world, in my opinion. So many questions along the way here. You did mention a $5 billion goal at one point. I'm curious, what's your AUM at this point?
Yeah, we're just under a billion. I mean, we're probably 700 million if we think about it. But we set 3-year strategic plans, and so that's kind of in our 3-year strategic plan to get there. And part of that is securing some institutional financing alongside of our retail investor network, so individual investors can invest. So kind of in the middle of that right now. So more to come on that, but. We're raising quite a bit of money every year. We're probably raising between, $100 and $120 million a year, so about $10 million a month, to support our retail investor network and find really great properties to buy.
Okay.
And then so that institutional capital partner would kind of come with that larger check size, $300 to $600 million. And we're kind of in that process now.
Yeah. So that brings up a lot of questions. I want to come back to the institutional capital after we get into a little more of the details there, but I'm curious, you mentioned you did some crash pads, which is interesting. I never heard that terminology before. And then, of course we all know the flips and the process like you did with your partner in DC, but when you guys were making the decision that you wanted to go in and build this large organization, not just a couple of guys doing some flips together, what made you land on self-storage? Because, 8 years ago, self-storage was not as sexy as it is today, or not as kind of cutting edge, I don't think.
It's sexy now?
I would say it's sexy. I would say it's sexy every time I see my deposit hit, my distribution hit the account. It's that sexy, but... What talk to me about that though. Like what drove you to self-storage over some of the other asset classes?
No, in any good decision, you have criteria for making your decision, right? I mean, anytime you decide what kind of car I'm going to buy or what house I'm going to buy or what neighborhood I'm going to live in, you're going to, your wife or your significant other are going to sit down and say, these are the things I want, right? And so we did that at Spartan, and we basically said easy to own, easy to evict, and easy to maintain. So the three E's of storage or of investing. So that eliminated multifamily for us. That eliminated assisted living facilities. That eliminated active retail. I mean, I guess retail could be triple net, but that eliminated a lot of different asset classes that would otherwise have not met that criteria. And so self-storage, industrial, maybe some triple net stuff kind of fizzled to the top, right? That eliminated flipping, because flipping is not those three things, right?
Not at all,
right? So that kind of narrowed down our focus. And then when we looked at self-storage, we looked at its performance over the last 40 years as being one of the best performing asset classes out of all major asset class types. And it was a perfect fit for us. We wanted to scale our company in a way where we could control the variables. We wanted to build our own property management. We wanted to build our own construction company. We wanted to have all that stuff done in-house. And so self-storage enabled us to do that. And then given its track record, it was an easy decision for us.
Got it. So you have in-house property management and construction. I'm always curious on the construction piece, because those are property management. Generally, it's individuals that are on site which it might be a little bit different with self-storage as well. And then construction management, do you essentially have crews that are moving all over the country, or do you just have, you hold the GC and then you hire subs wherever you go? What does that look like?
Yeah. So, you know, for someone who's not maybe familiar, I would say, you know, you have two, when you get into commercial construction, you have two major delineations, right? So we are a licensed general contractor in over 7 states. We're building 500,000 square feet across the United States right now. The contractor our company is licensed. We're a licensed GC. We go into markets and we do everything to the job shack trailer. So if you show up to one of our construction sites, you'll find a Spartan employee in the job shack trailer on the site, actually moving around to the different locations.
Yeah.
Now, as far as the crews and the equipment and all the stuff that goes into the concrete and, you know, pushing dirt and all that, that's all locally hired and vetted by under our general contractor's license. So we're putting together a lot of that stuff, and we have a lot of national supplier relationships where we can get uber efficiencies in doors and metal and all types of roofing systems and things like that. So it becomes very economical for us to do it in-house.
Okay.
You know, from that standpoint.
And so going back to your three E's, you said easy to own. So that really talks to the property management piece. My understanding in this space is these are highly technology driven at this point. There's not a lot of requirements like there might be with certainly flipping, but more so like I'm thinking multifamily. You don't necessarily have to have bodies and seats at sites in order to run these things, do you?
Yeah, yes and no. You always need somebody there. And okay. It doesn't matter who you are. It doesn't matter if you've got the best technology in the world. Someone's got to go and sweep out the unit. Someone's got to change the lock. Someone's got to walk the property and pick up trash and do those things. So you're never going to get rid of that. On the other hand, you know, there's some properties that command somebody being there because it's, you know, 1100 or 1200 units and there's just a lot of activity. You know, what do you do when your gate doesn't open when somebody booked your unit online and rented a truck, filled up their moving truck, drives all the way to this property and their gate can't open? I mean, how frustrated would you be, right?
Sure.
You can't get rid of the people. And I think, you know, we automate every facility so that it could run completely without a person, completely autonomous. And you know, some of the best operators do the same thing, and maybe they do it a little bit better than we do. And maybe they, you know, a lot of people don't do it as well as we do, right? But at the end of the day, you still need people. It's still a highly intensive people business, but you don't need 15 people at a 1,000 unit building. You need like 2, right? So, you know, when I say easy, you know, I would say easy to operate or easy to own. I think people take that too extreme and think that they're just going to throw a revenue management software in place and a call center and they're going to lease up without any people at the property. And I think that's a fool's errand a little bit. We've run into a lot of family office that have bought self-storage thinking they can run it from California, something in Tennessee or something like that. And they've been sort of surprised in how much still you need to have that person, but it's just not labor intensive like a lot of other asset classes might be, especially like assisted living, right? Where you have to have tons of staff and food and transport and all that stuff, right? So it's not nearly that intensive as even a multifamily building, right? Where you might have leasing agents and maintenance people and, you know, 200 units have 400 toilets potentially, right?
Yeah.
Or, you know, 200 units is probably no toilet, right? So you don't need to have that staffing there that you would on other asset classes.
Okay, great. Yeah, thanks for walking through that too. And I think, you know, you see a lot of the, I won't say mom and pop, but kind of the smaller guys that maybe are just getting started in this space. And I think they're attracted to this because they think there's not many people that are involved in the business. When in fact, it sounds like, yes, you still need to be a people leader. You still need to manage those resources really, really effectively. Now, I'm intrigued with the idea about the fact that we've seen just a ton of this stuff being built over the last handful of years. It seems like every corner there's a new self-storage piece popping up in my neighborhood anyways. Is there a point where there's going to be saturation, or are you concerned about certain markets at this point? Or are there certain markets that look much better? I would imagine there are. So
there are some markets where there's no self-storage, wide open demand, super high pricing, high barriers to entry. And there's markets where I wouldn't put another square foot there, right? So, you know, it's and everything in the middle. So yep. I think when you're getting into this industry, you've really got to understand how to evaluate a market. And I could confuse everybody with fancy ways of how we do it and the data we pull and all that. But at the end of the day, how are the other facilities occupied? What is their in-place rents? What are their asking rents? What are they realizing? You know, what is the strength of that rent? Are they getting 50 cents a month, or are they getting $3 rents? Right. Yeah. So, you know, if you come into a poorly occupied market and you're getting, you know, $6 a year rents, probably would stay away from that market. If you're in a market that's getting $30 rents annually and everybody's full with a wait list, you know, it's probably a pretty good market. And we look at a lot of other variables like population growth, income growth, job growth. What are the economic factors? What is the supply and the demand? You know, what is the populace within a 3 and a 5 mile? There's a lot of things that go into understanding demand. But at the end of the day, fundamentally, how is your pricing power? How is your occupancy within that 3 mile area? Because self-storage is a 3 mile market. It's not a, people don't relocate to your neighborhood to go to a good self-storage facility. Right. So yeah. it's what exists in that market currently. It's like a retail business, right? Where, you know, if you're going to go to Starbucks, you're probably going to go to the one closest to your house. Self-storage is location and price, right? And convenience. That's all it really is. You know, I always say it's three things: security, location, and price. That's it. There's nothing else really more to it. I mean, you can have a little bit of a better brand or a little bit better looking property, and that kind of plays into your security, right? Mm-hmm. You know, do you want to put your property in that facility that looks like garbage, or would you rather go to one that looks a little bit nicer? Maybe the pricing is a little bit higher, but you know you're not going to get broken into, or you're not going to have as many problems that you might have at a lesser quality property.
Love it. Love it. Yeah. So let's talk about business plans. Are these buy and hold cash flowing assets from day one, or is there a value add strategy that you're normally using? What's the approach?
Yeah, I would say there's two basic strategies in storage. There's mark to market, which means you're buying something below market rents and you're bringing them up to market. So existing facility, day one cash flow or cash flowing, and maybe those rents are a little bit below market and you're trying to bring mark to market, right?
Okay.
Or you build opportunistically from the ground up. So you have a property where it's greenfield development or some kind of a lot, and you're building a brand new site and you're taking it through its lease up. Those are typically 5-year business plans where you have a year of entitlement, a year of construction, and 3 years of leasing up a facility. That's typically about 70 to 75,000 square feet.
Okay.
And so and then you have the stuff in the middle, right? Where you can buy an existing facility, maybe you can expand it, or there's some kind of repositioning, but those are less common today. It's becoming harder to find things that pencil. It's harder to find those expansion plays because of the way that costs of construction have gone up and the way that rents are currently in general. So
now, is the construction or development of these, is it, I would imagine it's highly driven based on cost of concrete, cost of steel, because those are probably the two main products going into this. Is that true?
Totally. I would say from the time you get to the property to grade and fully permitted, your two biggest variables are going to be, you know, concrete, metal, doors, right? That's pretty much going to be your variability there. But okay, before you get to foundations, it's wildly variable, right? So, you know, I would say that every market, it's going to be a little bit different, you know, and this is just talking, I'm just talking about construction in general, right? Where you have, mm-hmm. you know, what are the permit costs? What are the entitlement expenditures you're going to have? Where utilities are at, you know, what's the quality of the soil, you know, so getting it to a foundation, that's going to have wild variability depending on the market that you're in. Mm-hmm. But generally, once you get to a foundation where you're pouring the concrete on a level plane and up, you're absolutely right. Those three things like metal, roof, utilities, whatever it might be, those are going to be the things that variable your cost, concrete, things like that. Yeah.
Okay. Makes sense. Yeah. It seems like, so I worked for a large financial services company, a credit card company, actually, and my clients quite often were builders, developers, and we saw the cost of lumber impacting that, the cost of roofing, the cost, even like electrical wire drove a lot of those,
oh, yeah.
those type of decisions, whether it made sense or not. So that's really interesting. So now You mentioned that I believe in this year or in the next 3 years, the goal is to grow from 55 facilities to 100 plus.
Our annual roadmap this year is to grow to 100 facilities, and we've sold some. We've sold about 8 in the last 12 months. Okay. We're sort of trimming the facilities that we don't want, that don't make sense for our specific portfolio, but might make a lot of sense for another's. Okay. But we're growing to over 100 properties, and that puts us at a point where we have enough revenue coming in from the facilities that we can really ratchet up the quality of our team. So we've already done that. So when we up till now, we really haven't had anybody at the helm of our operation that has storage experience. And when I say that, I mean, a lot of people might say, well, I have storage experience because I worked in storage for 5 years or something. But I'm talking about folks that have come from the largest self-storage operators in the world and who had, you know, VP or higher experience. You know, so we've really built up our leadership team recently to have, we recruited the VP of asset management from Extra Space. We've recruited somebody who has 20 years of operational experience as our VP of operations. So we've really built up our leadership team in our self-storage brand. And so I would say now that we're poised to kind of take the portfolio to the next level, we can continue to hiring the best people from the best operators. Because once you get to 100 properties, you have that income to start getting those fancy things, right? Those nicer, higher quality people, where it's been kind of bootstrapped up until this point, where it's been, you know, I have self-storage experience through my company, you know, and likewise, a lot of other people do too, but that doesn't mean you have, you know, a rich history of working for a company like Public Storage or Extra Space, where you've seen the high level performance. Yeah.
So, yeah, that's interesting. And that kind of brings me into my next thought. I'm curious, is the goal in the growth to create some type of exit strategy that you might not have access to with 50 units under your belt, where 100 units now you start, other types of organizations start looking at your units for exits? Is that built into this in any way, or?
Yeah, I think having one exit strategy is kind of a fool's approach. I think we're going to buy this, we're going to flip it, whatever. It's kind of like, well, what if you can't, right? So I think when you start getting scale to over 100 properties or even 50 properties, you get the attention of sort of everybody, right? So you have institutional equity that's now interested in you because you have a seed portfolio that they can sink their teeth into. Yeah. You've got enough property to where you can start turning over property, but and realizing those business plans for investors. But then you still have a core group of assets that you can continue to run your operation with the best talent. So you want to make sure that you're not cannibalizing, right? If you're an operator that's just, hey, I'm going to buy facilities, fix them up and flip them. Well, you're never really building your organization. So if you can't flip them, you're sort of stuck and you're not really right-sizing the operation to perform, right? While you have to hold those for a longer period. Yep. So there are some properties we get and we flip, no problem, right? And then maybe they're too small or they're kind of part of a portfolio we don't really want. There's some properties where it was ground up development and we've decided, hey, it's now stabilized and the investors in here don't really want to be part of a stabilized deal. They invested in this for the ground up riskier, high return nature. It's time to sell this into a new fund. Or sell it at arm's length if we don't want to keep it in our portfolio. So we're sort of aggregating the best assets into our portfolio to become a highly attractive buy target for anybody, whether you're a mom and pop operator or 1031 exchange or an institutional buyer.
Love it. Love it. Yeah. So that brings me then to kind of the culmination of all of this. Like, as an organization with Impact Equity and what our listeners are, passive investors. So why invest in self-storage and what type of returns could be expected? What type of offerings can people expect to see from from Spartan?
Sure. Millennial 40s, right? Death, divorce, displacement, and downsizing, right? So those things are driving self-storage regardless of how much stuff you have, right? And I always ask people, you know, who here has ever used a self-storage? And all the hands go up. And, you know, I always say, keep them up. It's because if you had too much stuff and all the hands kind of go down. And then I say, okay, let's go through the crowd here. why did you use self-storage? Well, I use self-storage because I was moving, because I got divorced, because I got laid off, because I was downsizing, because my mom died and I had to go put her stuff in storage while we were selling her house. Whatever. It's those four D's that never go away. And so self-storage is life events. The other 30% is businesses, right? So 30% of your customers are typically going to be sheet metal contractors, roofers, landscaping companies, food distributors, newspaper distributors, or even in a couple of ours, to personal recreational use, like Little League baseball teams. All these people are going to use self-storage regardless of what's going on in the world. You know, when we saw COVID hit, we saw people close their offices and move equipment in. We saw people close their restaurants and move storage stuff in to our property. We saw people free up their space in their house to make a gym or an office because now they're working from home or working out from home.
Yeah.
And, you know, and once that kind of resided, you saw declining occupancy, you saw kind of rates go down because people kind of went back to normal. And then self-storage kind of goes back to like people who are moving or, you know, upgrading their house. And so I think it's important to understand why people use it. And yes, we have too much stuff, but most of it is because of just the transactional nature that Americans have in all the things in our life. And, you know, I just like to tell two stories, right, about this to kind of put a bow on it. Mm-hmm. When I was a pilot, I was flying to Florida during the pandemic, and there was one, everybody
out of Florida.
Right. My real estate agent wanted me to put myself in storage and, you know, to clear it out and stage it. So then I was using self-storage. The sale took a little bit longer, so my stuff stayed in storage for a little bit longer, right? And then when I got into my new house, I started having children and we wanted to expand it. So we moved our stuff in self-storage. And, you know, as everybody knows, that 2 to 3 month renovation timeline turned into a year.
Of course, yeah.
And I even did the math at the end. I was like, I should have just thrown all this stuff away.
I
thought it was only going to be a couple of months and da-da-da. So, you know, so, and that's because I was growing, right? I mean, we were, you know, so growing, shrinking, you know, if you could go the other way from a house to down to an apartment, you're always going to have this need for extra space. And that's really just what it boils down to.
And that need and the demand in the current trends that we're seeing is what leads investors to these type of investment offerings, because they're going to provide consistent, really stable, risk-adjusted returns, which is what I found. Like I started investing in multifamily and mobile home parks, and my first kind of diversification play away from that was with Spartan Investment Group, you know, a couple of years ago. And what I've noticed since partnering with you guys is that distributions are consistent. They actually, I believe they've increased year over year on the fund that I'm a part of. And communication with you guys is fantastic, which is really kind of the three main pillars that I'm looking for a passive investment. So what can you tell the group? I know you guys have a number of different offerings, or you have in the past, but what kind of offerings can they expect to see from you? Is this generally fund model or is it single assets? What does that look like?
I think what's great is, you know, you kind of have the option to do your preference. You know, if you're like, I just don't really know. I just want to put it into something that cash flows. We have an income fund for that. So we have a, or we have deals. If you're like, I hate the fund model, I want to go single asset syndication, we do single asset syndications from time to time. If you are like, I don't care about cash flow, I just want the best possible outcome, the best possible multiple. I'm risk averse. I can do ground up development stuff. We have that too. If you want to do just the debt side of things and know that every month a check's going to come up with a promissory note that's, you know, backed by the property, we have that as well. So really, you know, we've kind of customized the preference of investors to what, where they can kind of come in and invest with us. So
I love it. Love it. And then a big question that I get is, are these all 506B or Cs, or do you have Bs as well?
We do both. We do both.
You both. So you really do handle it all. Okay.
Yeah.
Very good.
Yeah. We mix it up, and we have 1,100 investors that actively invest. And, you know, some investors are not accredited, and we used to do all 506B in the past. And, you know, and then we kind of went to C because, you know, you start advertising and marketing. You've got to sort of get your name out there. Right. So, but every once in a while, we'll look back and say, hey, you know, here's a deal for our non-accreds as well. So
love it. Love it. I think that's really valuable as well. It seemed like a lot of people progress through that 506B, then they move to 506C and they forget about all those non-accredited. And I I got into this business to help that newer passive investor, because I think everybody should have access to these types of investments. So I think it's great that you guys do that. It's a huge value you're offering to the investment community, and one that I think should be served more and better than it is today. So, well, let's, if we can you share a little bit about your thoughts on the economy? Everybody's talking interest rates and what's going to happen in 2024. Yeah. Can we play some crystal ball for a little bit?
What are your thoughts there? I'll start with doom and gloom and then we'll maybe go positive.
So, okay, good.
I would say personally, we're being impacted by property tax assessments. I think that's an industry plaguing thing where, you know, maybe asset values have declined as a space, but the counties still want their increasing assessments. So that's been impacting our portfolio. Now we fight everything. But the problem is with property tax assessments is you get assessed on your new value and you immediately have to start paying that new value regardless, right? And you can dispute it and probably win, but that might take 6 to 12 months to do that. Yeah. And then you get your money back, but you can't just not pay the new stepped up gain, right? You have to do that. Right. That's a big one. We actually renegotiated our insurance and we're actually getting a better policy, but a lower cost. I don't know how we did that, but we, you know, there's a lot of things, you know, don't give up on that, right? You might say, oh, insurance costs, assume, but insurance costs is a wild variable. And then people are price sensitive now. And you know, with higher interest rates, people aren't moving as much, right? They're not transacting. All transaction volumes are down. You got that 3% mortgage and you don't want to move because why would you move?
Yep.
8% mortgage. And, so I think what we're seeing across all industry is, you know, in interest rates impacting asset values and cash flow. I mean, it's hard to make cash flow when you've got an 8% rate. It's easy when it's a 3% rate, right? So a lot of multifamily was on, you know, variable rate loans that have ceased distributions, and that's created an environment where there's either no distributions or worse, a capital call. Yeah. You know, we've been getting hit with property tax assessments and insurance adjustments. You know, that's kind of a bad thing. But you know, these are just investment things, right? This is just popping the hood. I mean, there's no investment out there that isn't going to have some kind of headwinds. It's just how do you navigate through them, right? How do you make sure that you're fighting your assessments and redoing your insurance and making sure your rates are fixed or some kind of a index that is going to make sense for your deal? You know, in storage specifically, I'll start with the bad again and go good. You know, we're seeing declining asking rents, meaning that the properties aren't getting as much. We can't say, hey, you know, we might offer a 10 by 10 unit for $200 a month. Now it might be like first month rent free, or it might be $100 or $50. And you might be thinking, oh, okay, well that's really bad because, you know, you're not asking as much rents. The beauty about self-storage is that once you get that customer in there, they're sticky. And so we will increase their rents to where the normal rent was after they move in. So that's kind of a silver lining to self-storage. And I think, you know, we've gotten inflation sort of under control and, you know, we might see some rate cuts this year that make it a great time to invest in real estate in general, with keeping in mind of how the operator is going to manage those kind of fundamental things. And those are kind of where we are today, I think, and where we have to think about, you know, the industry and kind of where we're investing and things like that. So I hope that was
helpful. So did you see, it definitely was. Did you see the values of these assets drop year over year like we did in multifamily as well, just simply based on interest rates or?
So our average sale cap rate in 2023 was a 3.75% realized on T12. So,
wow,
incredible, right? So the Green Street latest data on self-storage cap rates as an average was 5.3% cap rate. And cap rates are usually a little bit higher in self-storage than they are in multifamily as an industry, right? They've always been that way. It's always been kind of trending. I did notice in one of the most recent Green Street reports, from their peak, multifamily and office have been hit the hardest, you know, 29 or 30% declines in value from their historic peaks. I mean, but the peaks were insane. I mean, it was like late 2021. Self-storage was one of the least impacted. When you look at the three asset classes that did the best, lodging, mobile home parks. So lodging, mobile home park, and self-storage were the top three least impacted values from the peak highs. And wow. Again, I'm just recycling the Green Street data. That's not my own thing. It's just what
sure.
published. And you know, in that top five, maybe industrial was in there, and a few other asset classes that have been hit. But you know, I think the fundamentals are still there for self storage. Mobile home parks, I love. I've done a mobile home park investment myself. And then lodging obviously has come screaming back. I mean, everybody's out traveling and et cetera. Yep. So, I would say we have been impacted, but it's been very subtle, which is a good thing and a bad thing. It's great when we own it, that values haven't been impacted, but if you're buying it at a higher interest rate, it really makes it hard for cash flow, you know, to make an arbitrage on money when you have negative leverage. I mean, before, when I say negative leverage, for those that don't know what I'm talking about, I mean, you could buy a property in cash flow because the cap rate, which is basically the cash flow you receive if you pay all cash, was actually higher than the interest rate, right? Now the interest rate is higher than the cap rate. So that's negative leverage because the leverage you're putting on the property is higher than the actual in place on unlevered properties. So it's harder to make cash flow right now. Couple that with rising property taxes and insurance, you know, the industry's got headwinds, but I think long-term fundamentals with interest rates going down and real estate actually weathering the storm as well as it did, mm-hmm. I think we're in for a great future in this. It's a great time to be buying in the space when a lot of folks are pencils down.
I love it. So we hear this theme often is be greedy when others are fearful and fearful when others are greedy, and people are afraid right now. So you think now is a good time to be buying in this asset class or building, developing, much like the other asset classes as well.
Now's the time to be picky, right? Now is the time to invest, but it's a time to scrutinize, you know? So we are buying right now, but we're buying, you know, we're kind of on either ends of the spectrum. It's like we're looking at high quality assets, existing assets that are coming at some discount for some reason.
Sure.
Or we're looking at the other end of the spectrum where we're getting a great basis in land to develop a new site that has really strong demand and market rents. The in-between value add stuff is more questionable. Where if you're buying a, you know, first generation property or class C property and you think you're going to make it class B and you're going to get the rents up, that's a little harder to stomach right now versus buying the best, you know, some of the best quality products for a lower cost going in. So, you know, we're seeing, you know, really nice property trade, you know, at a discounted cap rate because maybe the fund that owns it or some circumstance makes them sell it because of the denominator effect. Maybe their portfolio has too much office that devalued and now their storage is higher and they have to offload assets to stay in compliance with their fund. And then the ground up stuff is like it's really hard to build stuff right now because you can't get financing. So you can go, like, the self-storage deliveries are way down. We have the opposite problem from 8 years ago where we had too much inventory coming online. We have no inventory coming online. We have the lowest amount of construction deliveries in the storage space than we've had in over a decade. And that's because it's really hard to build because banks don't want to lend construction right now. That's high up on their risk. So I would say if you're on, you know, we're on kind of either end of that. And I would say that that's where I want to be right now.
Interesting. Yeah. So it sounds like value add's not the play. Starts are down kind of for different reasons than what we hear in some of the other asset classes. But interesting that the two different sides are really where the opportunity is. And for an organization with the number of employees and the growth trajectory that you have, you're actually in a position where you can really take advantage of these opportunities because, as you said, it's hard to build. And if you've got the infrastructure and the business to support it, then that's really ideal and right for you guys. So very good. Well, I'm curious, is there anything else that we should have discussed about this asset class or Spartan Investment Group before we get into our final questions?
No, I think everybody wants to know if this is like storage wars. You know, people always ask that. And, you know, so I'll answer the million-dollar question. You know, what's cool about storage is if you don't pay, after 3 days, you get locked out. And after 30 days, you go into the auction process. And so there isn't like a guy that comes and, you know, does it live or anything like that. Usually it's all done online. But what's neat about that is that we can get our tenant out and collect our money that we would have otherwise lost. And we get our unit back, you know, usually within a few months without, you know, any eviction process because there is no eviction process. It's an auction.
Yeah.
we have sure. a right to lien the property if there's non-payment. It's in the lease. It's one of the most powerful things in the storage lease that I can think of. And so it's all done online. You know, selfstorageauctions.net is a site you can use, and they do the lien way, you know, lien process and put notices in the paper and things like that. It's very automated from that perspective. So no drama, unfortunately.
Okay. So you've not been involved in any of those where they're the suspense, the music's playing, and they're cracking the lot so you can see what exciting gems and jewels are left in the storage units, huh?
Yeah, exactly. And usually when we open the door, there's really not a whole lot in there to sell anyway. So you know, auctions aren't making you rich. I mean, they're just you're getting your unit back. That's what you want, right? I mean, think about it. If you have a non-paying tenant in your single family home, what do you really want? You just want a paying tenant in there, right?
Exactly.
And so as fast as you can make that happen, and the levers in self-storage that you can pull are really powerful. And, you know, I always like to say, people really care about people, right? We care about housing people and kicking people out of houses and stuff like that as a country. But no one cares about grandma's dresser in a storage, right?
So we haven't get anybody too excited. Yeah.
Yeah. That's not really going under the legislator's spotlight, you know, evicting somebody's, you know, junk. So
right. Old Christmas decorations. Well, very good. Well, I'm curious for investors that are interested in learning more about Spartan. I'd love, how can people find Spartan Investment Group?
Yeah, Spartan-investors.com is our website, or you can email me Ryan@Spartan-investors.com, and happy to walk through anything you might need to get.
Very good. And any specific educational resources that you would steer a new passive investor that is wanting to learn more about self-storage?
Yeah, we've got a few ebooks on self-storage investing that I'm happy to share with the listeners for, you know, no cost. We also have, you know, there's also two associations, the Self-Storage Association and the Inside Self-Storage Association, ISS, both great resources for learning about the industry.
Fantastic. All right. And then a few quick questions here. Is there a favorite book in the last year that you've read, or even more recently, or one you're planning to in the near future?
Yeah, I would say the most recent favorite is Crucial Conversations. Mm. And the current favorite, or the thing that I'm reading now, is The Great Game of Business.
Hmm.
And that's a theme for us this year in what we're doing. So two really good books. Crucial Conversations is a game changer for someone like me who needs to work on emotional intelligence sometimes.
Okay. Understood.
I think we all do at the end of the day. And that book is excellent. I mean, that book has got some big nuggets in there about that. So very good.
I read that book years ago when I was a people leader, and I remember it was an uncomfortable read, but a very good read for sure for leading people and organizations. All right. So this is kind of a fun one. If do you have a recent bucket list item that you've checked off your list, or one you're hoping to in the near future?
You know, I rode in a helicopter. It's kind of weird. Like, you know, I've been an airline pilot, 10,000 hours, been flying for 20 years. I've never been in a helicopter, and I went in one for the first time in October.
Fantastic. Where was it? Was it local or someplace exotic?
It took off in Vegas, and it flew down into the Grand Canyon.
Wow.
So that was really cool. The other thing and maybe some of the people might cringe on this, but I actually went hunting for the, like really hunting, like in a lodge. And it was really fun, actually. You know, we did quail and pheasant hunting. It was kind of fun.
Very good. And did you get some quail and pheasant or?
Dozens. Dozens.
Awesome. Right. Very good. Very good.
Easter egg hunt. So it was fun. Yeah.
Yeah. Very good. All right. And then final question. If you were given 100 grand today, or you had 100 grand today that you had to invest, but you couldn't invest it in one of your deals or in self-storage, where would you place that capital?
Yeah, I would put it in one of my operating businesses, 100%. I mean, I think being a business owner, investing in your business or your company, in something you truly believe in and that you can control the outcome in is really powerful. If it had to be passive, maybe what you're getting at, I think you're going to see some heavy discounts in multifamily. I think that's it's a great space. I think Class B multifamily might be a great place to put some money, because, you know, there's going to be discounted distress in the market with maturing debt that people can't roll over or make right without a substantial amount of liquidity. Yep. You know, in mobile home parks are always a great bet. But personally, I'm invested heavily into debt, into private debt, private lending. That's where a majority of my passive income portfolio is now. Okay. And I just think it's been a great space for the past year, especially where there's all these inefficiencies in the market. And there's an opportunity to make some really great, consistent monthly returns in being a private lender.
Love it. Love it. Yeah, we're definitely looking at that with Impact Equity as well. And I'm looking at putting more and more of my dollars into that space as well. I probably put too much in the growth investments, and certainly need more in that type of arena. So, well, thank you so much. I really appreciate this, Ryan. You shared a ton of value with the audience and a lot of things that I didn't even think about this space, but it sounds like self-storage is a great place to diversify, if not hold a large portion of your capital. And I just really appreciate what you shared with us today, Ryan. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me, Randy. Appreciate it.
Awesome. All right. To our listeners, as always, we encourage you to continue your education process, but more importantly, make the decision to make that first or next passive investment. I'm convinced once you do, you'll be so happy that you did and wish you had done it much sooner. So be sure to join us again next Thursday for another great episode. And thank you again for joining us today.
Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen, another episode of The Gentle Art of Crushing It. It was an amazing episode. We know we sure learned a lot, and we hope you did as well. We want to take a second and thank you so much for viewing or listening to this episode. And please just know that we only ask for one favor, and that is to make this life magnificent. Thank you, and have a wonderful day.